I was saying that we talked about the first level of Sri Ramakrishna's sadhana, which he did without any guidance, and the result of that sadhana, in his own words, I want Gopesh Prana to read in Kannada, and then those who don't understand Kannada, I will read in English, and then we will go to the next step. As the days went by, the devotion of the Master increased more and more. The continuous flow of his mind towards the spiritual goal had its effect on the body too, giving rise to various physical symptoms. His need for food and sleep decreased, as the blood in his body was always moving speedily to his chest and brain. His chest appeared constantly reddish, and his eyes became sometimes suddenly filled with tears. He felt a great eagerness for the realization of the divine, and his mind was seized with an incessant anxiety as to what he should do and how he could have her vision. Therefore there was in his body a state of restlessness and lack of tranquility at all times except when he was meditating or worshipping. We were told by the Master himself that one day at that time he sang for the Divine Mother to hear and then prayed to her, weeping in his eagerness to have the vision. Dost thou not, O Mother, hear even a little of the many prayers I address to thee? Thou didst show thyself to Ramprasad. Why shouldest thou not then reveal thyself to me? He used to say, there was then an intolerable anguish in my heart because I could not have her vision. Just as a man wrings a towel forcibly to squeeze out all the water from it, I felt as if somebody caught hold of my heart and mind and was wringing them likewise. Greatly afflicted with the thought that I might never have Mother's vision, I was in great agony. I thought that there was no use in living such a life. My eyes suddenly fell upon the sword that was there in the Mother's temple. I made up my mind to put an end to my life with it that very moment. Like one mad, I ran and caught hold of it, when suddenly I had the wonderful vision of the Mother and fell down unconscious. I did not know what happened then in the external world, how that day and the next slipped away. But in my heart of hearts, there was flowing a current of intense bliss, never experienced before, and I had the immediate knowledge of the light that is Mother. On another occasion, the Master described to us in detail his wonderful vision mentioned above. He said, it was as if the houses, doors, temples, and all other things vanished altogether, as if there was nothing anywhere. And what I saw was a boundless, infinite, conscious sea of light. However far and in whatever direction I looked, I found a continuous succession of effulgent waves coming forward, raging and storming from all sides with great speed. Very soon they fell on me and made me sink to the abysmal depths of infinity. I panted and struggled as it were, and lost all sense of external consciousness. The Master told us that at that time he saw a luminous sea of consciousness. But what about the Divine Mother's form consisting of pure consciousness only? The form of hers with hands that give boons and freedom from fear? Did the Master then have the vision of that form also in that sea of light? It appears that he had, for as soon as he had the slightest consciousness at the time of his first vision, he, we are told, uttered repeatedly the word Mother in a voice choked by emotion. When that vision came to an end, there arose in the heart of the Master an eager, incessant urge and aspiration for a constant, immediate vision of the Divine Mother's form, consisting of consciousness only. Although it was not always manifested in external symptoms like weeping, etc., it always existed in his heart. Sometimes it increased so much that, unable to suppress it, he fell on the ground and struggled in pain. He wept so much, saying, "Bestow thy grace on me, Mother, and show thyself to me," that people gathered all around him. Not even a shade of concern for what they would think of such restlessness arose in his mind at that time. He used to say, "Although people stood all round, they appeared like shadows or pictures painted on canvas, and not even the slightest sense of shame or hesitation crossed my mind on that score. But immediately after, I lost consciousness on account of unbearable anguish, and then I saw that form of the Mother with hands that give boons and freedom from fear. The form that smiled, spoke, and consoled and taught me in endless ways." It's impossible for us to understand how the worship and anguish of Sri Ramakrishna's heart could lead to a stone image becoming so real that he would be able to have this vision of first pure consciousness, which is called light, and then the smiling form of the Mother. I told you that day that in our religious literature, the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita also, there are given these three steps and four yogas. The three steps are Dvaita, Vishishta Dvaita, and Advaita. Sri Ramakrishna started his worship of the Mother Kali from the Dvaitic point of view. What is the Dvaitic point of view? God is separate, I am separate. And a form of God, any form, can be worshipped if there is tremendous desire to have the vision of God, if there is tremendous, as in the words of Sri Ramakrishna, Vyakulata. If there is this desire, which can be one-sided, directed in one particular direction, forgetting the presence of his own body, forgetting his food, forgetting his sleep, it will lead to the vision of God. What do we understand by that? That the way he concentrated his own energy, which is called tapaha, you are listening to this, what is it called? The one that you recited? Bhriguvai Varunihi? Huh? No, no, no. What is it called? The heading? Bhriguvalli and Varuni Vidya. Is it called Varuni Vidya?
Brahma Nirupanam. Brahma Jigyasa.
Brahma Jigyasa. I don't know whether you understood it, but there is a son who goes to the father and asks him, teach me Brahma Vidya. And the father leads him step by step. Where? Inwards. This inward journey, which is very difficult for us to understand in this age, is the key to God realization. We do not understand that there can be an inward journey just as there are outward journeys. Outward journeys we understand very well. What is the outward journey? I want food, I move towards food. I want many things in this world and I move towards them. That is outward journey. Or if I want to move further with my legs and hands, I can travel to many places on this earth, and today they are going even to the Mars, Moon, etc. So this outward journey, we understand. How is it that we understand outward journey? Because passing through many births, when we created this body, with its karmendriya, karmendriyani are hands and legs as well as speech, we understand that kind of a journey today very well. But the inward journey, which was the main theme of research in this land of ours, has been almost forgotten. We do not know how to travel inwards. Outward journey has given us tremendous comfort. All kinds of inventions are there which have made life in the world quite comfortable as well as uncomfortable. We don't really think of the discomfort till it becomes very predominant, as it is becoming today. But the inward journey is perhaps hundredfold more difficult. And perhaps that is the reason India has forgotten how to move inwards. At the most, as I told you that day, we don't ask, what should I do? What should I feel? What should I practice? And what should I think? Though, if you study the history of India, there were times when what should I feel became very predominant, which is called Vishishtadvaita, the path of Vishishtadvaita, or the path of Bhakti. Bhakti also helps you to travel inwards. Karma helps you to travel inwards if we make it Karma Yoga and not Karma Bhoga. Bhakti, if it is for God, if it is for self-realization, also gives you a road, a path to travel inwards. Practice, which is mainly based on Raja Yoga, but not in its deep sense, because this age seems to be very difficult to practice Raja Yoga. That is another road. And finally, thinking, rational thinking, is also a yoga, Jnana Yoga, which also is a road to the inward journey. This inward journey, if you try to understand it in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, he starts at the Dvaitik level, where God is separate. Outside, you can look at an image, you can offer whatever you think God would like, because we always, in India, we develop the idea that whatever I like, whatever I value, God would also like that. So we have tremendous ways of uttering mantras and offering whatever we think is valuable. Right from food to jewels, we are always trying to offer what I think is good for me must be good for God also. There's no problem in that. It isn't as if it is not a way. It is a path, but the thing is it accompanied with bhakti? If I merely do something, like offer food to God, but there is no vyakulata, in the words of Sri Ramakrishna, then the food does not reach God. Why not? Supposing you offer anything to another human being without any feeling, without any relationship, it will not be acceptable. Even at the human level or even at the animal level, it will not be acceptable. There is a dog here called Bhola, and the first day I approached it, I did not wag its tail. So I thought I should form some kind of a relationship with it so that it understands my intention. So I took a biscuit. Immediately, the tail started wagging. Till today, he looks at me and the tail starts wagging. There is tremendous lesson in this observation, if we understand it and take it to the extreme level of understanding that emotion, feeling is absolutely necessary if you wish to have any relationship with anyone, whether it's animal or human beings, or why should God be separate from that? So this second level of what should I feel is what is given in what I read just now, that he felt such anguish that he says in his own words, as if somebody was wringing my heart and my mind like a towel to take out its water. That kind of anguish. And when that kind of anguish is not enough, he picks up a sword and says, all right, then what is the use of this body? Let me kill it. And he is about to take his head off when the mother appears. What could be the meaning? Why should the mother appear at such an extreme level? Are we all supposed to take a sword and cut our own throats? Well, we don't need to go to that extent, but that does not mean that deep feeling for the vision of God, this is the dvaitic level, remember, the dualistic level, where God is separate, I am separate, and I am trying to form a relationship, but the relationship has to be real. It has to be based on not only doing something, karma kanda. Remember that karma kanda today has become very popular and very predominant. But what about bhakti? We may say, yes, there is a little bit of feeling also. But the anguish that is felt by the worshipper whose food is not being accepted by God is also some kind of a feeling that is absolutely necessary. Reminds me of a story which I have heard somewhere, I don't remember where. There is a father who offers food to the deity every day, and one day he has to go away somewhere and he tells his son that today you offer food to God. So the young son takes food and puts it in front of the deity and again says, why don't you come and eat? You eat from my father's hands, why won't you eat from mine? So nobody appears and he starts crying and saying that you have to, because you accept it from my father and my father has told me to offer it today, so why would you not? And somebody appears, that is the story, and eats the food and goes away. So the family members say, now bring down prasad. There is no prasad. God literally ate it. Now these ideas are getting lost day by day, and yet we say, why is it that I have done so much japam and so much of whatever, and yet I don't have a vision of God? Or maybe we don't even say that. What we say is, why isn't my restlessness less? Why don't I have peace? Why don't I have joy? How is it possible? Just the outer rituals do not give me what I am asking for. As I said, even a human being will not relate to you if you offer food without any feeling. So think of it in terms of what I am asking for. I am asking a stone image to become real enough so that it can become related to me. So the first level of dvaita or dualism Sri Ramakrishna has crossed by his own effort as a human being. There is no sign of an incarnation of God. If we think from the very beginning, he was an incarnation of God, therefore, it is possible for him, not possible for me, which would be very wrong. He approaches the desire to have a vision of God or self-realization from the lowest point of view, which is called dvaita. And in dvaita, he is a human being and he wants to have a relationship with the mother Kali, and he does everything that is given in our shastras how to approach this from this point of view, dualistic point of view, which is still there to some extent. But what we forget is that we have to move on. Last time I tried to tell you that the whole of Hindu thought is move on. From dualism, you are supposed to move on to what is called Vishishtadvaita, which once upon a time was very popular in South India and maybe to some extent in North India also. But today, the real meaning of Vishishtadvaita has been lost. Reminds me of another story which I have read or heard, that there is a Vishishtadvaitin couple. They are sleeping at night. Maybe all of you know this story. They are sleeping at night and a thief enters the house and starts taking things and bundling them up. So both of them are awake, but they make no sound. Suddenly, the wife turns and the thief is scared and runs away. And the husband says, why did you turn? She says, I thought that on my other arm there were ornaments and he could take them away. And the husband says, why did you use your own willpower? This is Vishishtadvaita. We do not understand these ideas any longer. You want to believe that this world is the creation of God. It is functioning according to His will. Where is the question of any individual will? But it is so hard to believe that my will does not function on this earth at all. We have heard sentences like, even a leaf does not move without the will of God. We may be repeating those ideas verbally, but we don't really understand that actually it is not possible for anything to happen without the will of God. What is our idea of God? At the Vishishtadvaitic level, at the Dvaitic level, as I told you, it was God is separate, I am separate. And there is a way given to us to approach God from that point of view also, by asking, what should I do, what should I feel? All that is given in our shastras. Vishishtadvaitic level says, you have absolutely no will. This universe is God's creation. And don't think after creating this world, he's gone to sleep. It's not possible. He's functioning. In what way? He or she is functioning. In what way? Through the laws of nature, outside, through the laws within the human person, mentally, emotionally, in every way, and through the individual also. So this willpower, which is there in perhaps all the religions which are Vishishta Dvaitik, like Islam, they will always say Inshallah. Inshallah means by the will of God. I don't know whether they also believe that the things are happening due to the will of God, and in Christianity also it is there. This level of Vishishta Dvaita demands something much more than the Dvaitic level. In the dualistic level, you are supposed to have some kind of willpower because you are functioning through the idea of separation. You are separate, God is separate. In Vishishta Dvaita, it is not possible. It is the will of God that has to function in every way. And the best example in the life of Sri Ramakrishna is Girish Chandra Ghosh. Sri Ramakrishna, even perhaps you know the story of Girish Chandra Ghosh. He is a drunkard and he's done everything that is possible, which is called bad in the world. And suddenly he comes to know Sri Ramakrishna, and protest within him and the rebellion is great. He doesn't want to follow any particular method, but he is full of anguish. Maybe you people don't know that he was full of sorrow at various happenings in his life, and he was about to commit suicide. Even Master Mahashay, who has written the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, was about to commit suicide when they reached Sri Ramakrishna. So one day Sri Ramakrishna tells Girish, "All right, you can't do anything, you can't meditate, you can't do japam, no problem. You just take the name of God when you wake up or when you take your food." He says, "It's not possible. I am an actor." He was a dramatist, an actor. He had a theater, and he says, "There is no particular time when I take my food, and I can't promise that I will take the name of food, the name of God, when I eat my food." So he says, "All right. Then when you go to sleep, take the name of God." He says, "Even that I cannot promise, because sometimes I sleep at 1 o'clock, and sometimes I don't sleep, and sometimes it's not possible for me to promise." Then finally Sri Ramakrishna says, "All right, if you can't do anything, then give me the power of attorney," which means you have absolutely no will of your own. And Girish Chandra Ghosh thinks, "Oh, that's the easiest. All right, you take my power of attorney." Later on, Girish says in his life, there's a beautiful life now, with great details. He says his son died. He says, "I could not cry because it was the will of God. It's the will of God who gave me the son. It's the will of God which takes him away. I could not cry." And he says, "I did not realize that maybe he was asking me to take the name of God once or twice in a day, and here I could not stop thinking of him because I had promised to give him the power of attorney. So before I did anything, I had to ask myself, is it the will of God?" So the will of God is the main thing in Vishishta Dvaita. And as we proceed in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, you will start seeing that the will of God became like second nature to him. I'll give you just one or two examples. He had the desire, or he wanted to think of God in a place where he would not be disturbed. He wanted to have a kind of fence around the place where he would sit and do his meditation. And he needed a rope, and he needed some bamboos, and he needed some kind of a cutter with which to do it. And the next day, the gardener comes and tells him, you know, all these things are lying on the bank of the Ganga. Can it be possible that the will of God will take over in such a way that I don't need to think of anything? Everything will be provided. As you proceed in his life, you will realize whatever he needed in the form of his next level of tapasya or next level of sadhana, it came to him without his asking about it. Another example is, he has developed various physical symptoms which to the people around seem like disease. So they take him to this doctor and that doctor and this vaidya and that vaidya. Nobody is able to find out what exactly could be wrong with him. He has tremendous anguish, and as he says, he falls down on the ground and rubs his face and people stand around. I read somewhere in a magazine printed by the Brahmos of that age, where they say that some people, even the Englishmen, remember that that day, in those days, the English were ruling our country, going on boats in the Ganga, they would hear this hue and cry, and they would come over, and they would stand around, and it became a kind of in Calcutta. People came to know there is a man living in Dakshineshwar temple who dies and comes back to life in one day so many times. So I read this in a printed magazine of the Brahma Samaj. So he is falling on the ground, rubbing his face till blood comes out, and nobody knows what is wrong with him. And some people thought maybe he has colic pain and that is why he's crying. And when he says, mother, mother, he's thinking of his physical mother to come and do something for him. So this is the condition, and then slowly he can't sleep, he cannot eat, he cannot worship in the temple. So everyone thinks he's going half mad. So let us do something about it. What should we do? And you read the Leela Prasanga or the Great Master. I don't know how many of you have read it in great detail, but this is what will teach you what this age is supposed to be and why it is the way it is and what we need to do in order to have some kind of joy and some kind of peace. So one day a woman comes out of a blue, I would say, and she lands on this Dakshineshwar temple steps, and Sri Ramakrishna looks at her and tells his nephew Hriday, go and call her. He says, why should I go and call a woman? She is the Bhairavi Brahmani. Why would she come to you? He says, no, just go and tell her that my uncle thinks of God and he wants to talk to you. So Hriday with great hesitation goes to her and says that I have an uncle who thinks of God or mad for God, and he is calling you. And she comes straight away and looks at him and says, oh, you are living here? What a strange idea. She says, I was told by the mother that I have to meet three people and guide them in their sadhana. I have met two of them and I have been looking for you, and you are here. So immediately Sri Ramakrishna tells her mother, see, I have this problem, that problem, my body burns and I just don't know what to do. She says, no problem, I will tell you what to do. So she takes him in her hands, and the remedy that she gives is fantastic. She says, it's written off in our ancient books. And this is what makes me feel What kind of a science was discovered in this land that these remedies and these symptoms have been written off in ages past and they can be repeated in this age? Doesn't it show that it is a perfect science? She says, in the books on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's written that he also suffered from the same symptoms of his body burning and blood oozing and not being able to sleep, not being able to do anything. So I will tell you, she just gets some flowers, makes a garland and puts some perhaps sandal paste on it, and she puts it round his neck, and it seems it functions. In this age of tremendous technology and tremendous inventions and discoveries of diseases, I would say that diseases are also being discovered and invented, and the remedies, would anyone of us who believe that Sri Ramakrishna was an incarnation of God believe that such a remedy is possible? I am sure our minds are full of doubt, and that doubt is killing us. I would tell you that. Swamiji has written a hymn. He says, in every age the incarnation comes to kill some asuras or rakshasas or whatever. In this age, what is he come to kill? Doubt. Sanshaya rakshasa. Are iske andar bolo. Sanshaya rakshasa. Now, rakshasas once upon a time used to be outside. And so the incarnation killed something outside there. What has it got to do with me? Nothing. I am not a rakshasa. But supposing the rakshasa changes, I am sure they can change their form, they can change their ways also. So this rakshasa has entered our own minds and hearts. And we doubt. So what is the result? Till the rakshasa is killed, how can we be full of joy? How is it possible? So anyway, I've just given you two examples. There are thousands of examples in his lifetime where it shows he has absolutely no doubt from the very beginning, even from the Dvaitic level, when he starts his worship of Mother Kali, he doesn't have any doubt. He knows the Shastra says this is the way to worship, and he follows it literally till he comes to this, that you don't show me because I am unfit, therefore let me kill myself. And she shows herself to him first as light, which is again something that we need to think about, as an ocean of light, and within that a form of the mother. I don't know whether you remember that Sri Ramakrishna had a vision one day. He says, my mind traveled, these are very fascinating visions. He says, my mind traveled along a path of light, and I saw on both sides, first this world, it was below everything. Then it rose to a level where gods and goddesses were there on both sides, presiding over their domain, presiding over their own levels of, you can call levels of beings or whatever. And then it crossed something which he calls in Bengali a reddish kind of light. And beyond that, there were seven rishis who were meditating. And then out of the light surrounding them, these are very deep ideas which we don't really think about, out of the light which is supposed to be Brahman, out of that light a child form was formed, and it went and embraced one of the rishis. And the rishi opened his eyes and looked at it with great joy and closed his eyes, and the child said, I am going down, you have to come down also. And when he saw Narendranath, who is called Swamiji, Swami Vivekananda, he says, oh, this is that rishi. Now these are also written off in our ancient books. So should we go back to these ideas once again and try and get some meaning out of life? That this travel is absolutely necessary, that I have to want it, I have to desire it, I have also to do something, feel something, think something, so that my doubts go away, so that I can also travel. So, now what does he do? Because he says, well, he has seen the mother's form surrounded by light, but that is not enough. He wants to see her all the time. Now this seeing God all the time, I am sure we don't like it. We don't like the idea that we should be seeing God all the time and we won't see this world at all. There are instances of that in his life. Once Mathur Babu, who was the proprietor of the temple, wanted to also have some kind of a vision. Some kind of a spiritual experience. Sri Ramakrishna told him, it's not necessary for you. You are doing everything for me, for the mother, and that is more than enough for you. He said, no, Baba. He used to call him Baba, means father. No, father, I want to have some experience also. So he says, all right, if the mother wills, you will have it. So one day he finds himself crying and thinking of the mother and not being able to pay attention to his accounts, his business, his ordinary life is. So after crying for a while, he says, oh, father, please take it away. I can't bear it. Maybe we will do the same thing. Then there is another example. Who was the other one? Oh, yes. Kalpataru day, he touched, yesterday she read about it, Trailokya Babu, Vaikunthanath Sanyal. So Sri Ramakrishna, he wanted some experience, so Sri Ramakrishna touched him. And of course he also had the vision of his Ishta, or whatever, we all have Ishtas. You know the idea of Ishta, you go deeper into that, you will realize what a wonderful idea it is. All right. So he has the vision of his Ishta, but then he goes back home and he can't do anything. He cannot stop seeing the Ishta in everything. Again the same thing, his ordinary life is absolutely useless. He can't do anything. So see the difference. On one side, I want to have some spiritual experience, but I haven't the capacity to live in it. So he says, I had the desire that it should go away. So it went away, but because of the grace of Sri Ramakrishna, it did not vanish completely. Sometimes I was able to have that vision again. Now, what should he do? Because remember that what is being unfolded in the life of Sri Ramakrishna is something not for himself. Maybe people like us with great difficulty have a vision of God and then we vanish or whatever. But for him, it was a continuous journey till he reached the level of Advaita, till he saw this presence of God everywhere, so that he would be able to give a message which would function in this age. Now he thought of himself, as again you will read in ancient books, that there are five ways of relating to God. Naturally, on his own, he is related to God as a child. I am the child, you are the mother. So he has realized the motherhood of God. But now he has to realize these various other Vatsalya, Sakya, Madhur, and what else is there? Dasya, Shanta, all these have to be experienced because this world needs them. Not that he needs them, this world needs them. So that we know, like I want to make friends with Bhola, I cannot give him, I have to approach him through the path that he understands. And his path is biscuits. I have to understand these things. I want to relate to, let us say, you people. How do I relate to you? Well, what do you want? Let us say you wanted me to come here and wanted me to talk about Sri Ramakrishna. I take it for granted that that is why you have called me. So, then I have to relate to you through this path. So, understanding that relationship depends on something that is wanted and reciprocated from the other side. Otherwise, it does not function. Supposing I stand on the road and start talking about Sri Ramakrishna's sadhana, maybe people will take me to the lunatic asylum. In the West, they would. Or perhaps in the West, they won't. In today's age, they would not. Very strange. In those days when Swamiji went there, they would have. All right. So now he thinks or suddenly appears in his mind that he wants to practice some other sadhanas. Like what? There is the episode of wanting the vision of, what would you call it? He wants to see the vision of Ramchandra. So how does he approach Ramchandra? Through Dasya Bhakti. Now, in his life, you would see that bhakti has become tremendously important. Or the emotional side of us. It isn't as if it is only his emotional side. It is present in every creature. So the emotional side on which bhakti movement is based and on which these five ways of approaching God is given in our ancient scriptures becomes predominant in his life. So he wants to have a vision of Ramchandra. The best way is not to become Sita. Look at that. The best way is to become Hanuman. So he knows, he has seen, I suppose, the image of Hanuman. He behaves exactly as a monkey would. Can you believe it? It's impossible to believe these things. That he literally became like a monkey. He would sit on the branches of trees. He would jump. He would not walk. He would eat fruit without peeling them. He would eat only fruit. Not only that, a tail grew. I find it mind-boggling that these things have been possible in this land, in this age, to show that we also had a science. And this was the science of psychology in depth. What is psychology in depth? Whatever you think of, you will become. What do I think of? Think of nonsense? Think of all kinds of rubbish and think of something that would take you on the way to self-realization or God-realization or whatever realization, you will reach there. This is the basic clue to Hindu thought. Whatever you think of, you will become, because mind is more powerful than body. Today we are trying to make it just the opposite. Body is supposed to be more powerful than the mind. So give everything to the body. Give organic food to the body. 3 months ago, I had gone to the U.S. and they asked me to give a lecture. And I started with saying that our physical evolution is over. I'm not going to grow horns again. And some people in the audience doubted that. Can you believe it? They, after the lecture was over, one gentleman and a doctor, what kind of a doctor, I don't know, but an Indian settled in America challenged me, saying, how can you say that physical evolution is over? I said, what are we going to grow now? 2 horns? Then there was a lady, American lady, a sannyasini, belonging to some ashram, some order, not the Ramakrishna Vedanta centers. She also asked the same thing. Won't we evolve a body where there will be no old age? I said, well, I don't know whether we will ever grow a body which will never grow old, but that is what is becoming so predominant that it is the body. And then I told them, because organic food has become not only in the West, it's here also, organic food. I said, today's religion is organic food. All other gods are gone. Give me organic food and I'll become spiritual. What do I need to become spiritual? Organic food. Think of these things. India has been living its life for thousands of years. And it has also a science. That science was based on thought, on emotions, not on physical food alone. We proved once upon a time that the human body can survive even without food. Sri Ramakrishna survived for 6 months without sleep, without food. Anyway, think of these things sometimes, and maybe the mind will become a little stronger. That's all. For us, it can become a little stronger by believing that such things could be possible even in this age. So he wants to become, he wants to have a vision of, let us say, Dasya Bhakti. What is it that you will see when you want to see Ramchandra? He doesn't see Ramchandra, he sees Sita. Very strange. Motherhood of God. That is what is again and again predominantly given in the life of Sri Ramakrishna. He sees a woman. He says, I wish I had it right now so that I could read it. Maybe tomorrow, please see that and we will read it tomorrow. He says, I was sitting in the Panchavati. I suppose most of you know what Panchavati is. With my eyes open, I could see the Ganga, I could see the trees, I could see everything, and suddenly I saw a woman coming towards me, very beautiful, very peaceful, with a very serene face, human, not a goddess, he says, because there were not those 3 eyes on the face. And I was wondering, who could she be? As suddenly, a black-faced monkey. You know the black-faced monkeys? There are lots of them in Pangot. So this black-faced monkey came from somewhere and fell at her feet. And from my mind, within myself, somebody said, Sita, the ever-sorrowful daughter of Janaka, Janaki. And he says, I was going to prostrate myself and she entered. This is again something very strange in this life, that all the visions he sees, they enter within him. What could be the meaning of that? Ask yourself, read, and maybe something We'll understand a little bit. All right. Half an hour has been given for questions. If there are no questions, I'm learning to drink like the South Indian. But I'm not very good at it. So the key to understanding why the ego has arisen in human beings, if you look at evolution, animals don't have an ego, though they must have a sense of their separation. But the rising of ahankar, ego, in its very predominant way at the human level, where each one of us says I, is very strong. So is it good or is it bad? From various points of view, you have to think of it. From the dvaitic, from the ordinary religious point of view, it's bad. It should be killed. It should be destroyed. Our ancient psychologists understood it can neither be killed nor destroyed. It has to be transformed. And the transformation was through dvaita, vishishta dvaita, advaita, till it vanishes into Brahman. That was the basic idea. So, knowing that millions of people cannot jump to advaita from the very beginning, so dvaita, where you pray to an outside God, an external God, which most of us believe that God is outside, was to begin. Then vishishta dvaita made it very predominantly a basis of relationship. Relationship, which we know very well, you relate to your mother, to your father, to your husband, to your wife, sister, brother, and the ego extends. So this extension gives you a feeling of joy. It gives you a feeling of relationship. But how to extend it to the whole universe? So Vishishta Advaita gives you the idea that ego is bad. Therefore, let go of your willpower. Understand that everything is functioning because of the willpower of God, which is also a very tough sadhana. It's no joke to forget. Sri Ramakrishna says it's like the Ashwatha tree. You kill it today, tomorrow you will find it coming up again. Wherever there is a little crack in any building, the Ashwatha will come out. It seems to be so powerful, especially in India. It's such a powerful tree that you cannot kill it. Literally, you cannot kill it. So ego is like that. So what do? As he says, let the rascal be. Sri Ramakrishna's language, very beautiful, I love it. Let the rascal be, but let it be the child of God, let it be the servant of God. Why does he insist on these two relationships? I tried to explain to you the very first day that other relationships are not functioning. Think of the family life, where once upon a time, you had this tremendous shelter within which you could practice your sadhana. But the center used to be the deity at home. Now, millions of people all over the earth are leaving that level unconsciously, subconsciously. There is no center in the house any longer. There are houses, there are no homes. Why? Maybe it is the necessity of the age. Children are moving away. If they move away, how can the center remain? The center used to remain because the family had a kind of boundary within which you practiced your sadhana. And in millions of homes, billions of homes, everywhere, all over the earth, there used to be a symbol of God at home. Now the symbols are there. It isn't as if the pictures are not there and the images are not there and the paraphernalia is not there. In millions of Hindu homes, they are still there. And maybe in Christian homes and maybe in Islamic homes also they are there. But the concept of home has vanished. Because of the very necessity of the age that people, the younger generation, is leaving home. When younger generation leaves home, it becomes a house. It becomes a mess. It becomes a place where you come to eat and sleep. Isn't that happening? All over. So then, what do you do? How do you handle this ego? What to do with it? So, in this age, Sri Ramakrishna says, it isn't as if the necessity has gone. The necessity to relate has not gone. It's become more, more necessary to relate. But because your children are living far away in US and Europe and where else, you need to relate. So the need to relate is the desire for joy. How can I become a little more joyful? So look all around, relate. So that also is the necessity of this age, that I need to relate consciously now, not subconsciously, not instinctively. We are being thrashed. I don't know whether we realize it or not. The people who are living in homes which have become isolated, where there are no children, no grandchildren and no whatever, they are losing that joy. So either it is the motherhood of God which says, now you better expand, or what will you call it? You will say, oh, it's bad, it should not happen. But it is happening. What will you do? So consciously come out of your boundaries and relate to anyone around. That is the only way to get back some joy. And then, of course, relate to God in whichever form. And if you understand Sri Ramakrishna's message for having organized religion in this age, it means relating to those who are not instinctively related to you, not blood relationships. Have the capacity to extend yourself to relate outside your instinctive boundaries. Become more than human, or I would say become more than animal. Animals also love their children. So become more than that and understand that this age demands it. It isn't as if it's something I can either do it or not do it. If I want a little peace, if I want a little happiness or joy, I need to leave those boundaries and accept that my home is your home. Otherwise, it will become a mess, a hotel, where people will come, eat their food and go to sleep. That's all. What is love? First of all, try and understand that. Swamiji says, love can never arise if there is no freedom. So freedom, what is freedom? You can ask, what is freedom? As I tried to explain to you, that the human ego is evolving, has to evolve. The mind, the understanding, emotions, action, everything has to evolve. Therefore, the four yogas were given as paths in India. But the four yogas, what are they trying to do? They are asking you to change your ordinary. With the help of these four yogas, we are being asked to transform our ego from the lowest level to the highest level possible. The ego says, I. Our basic attachment is to ourselves, not to anyone else. If I am not there, I can't be attached to the other. So our basic attachment is to ourselves. So to get out of that, you have God, I, or another person, and I. You expand a little. Ego has to evolve further. Then it says, I and mine. The first level is I and mine. So this mine has to increase. If the mine does not increase, it will come back to I. I am feeding upon you for my sake. I am not trying to give anything to the other, which is what happens in human relationships if we do not give freedom. If freedom is there, it can become reciprocal. But if there is no freedom, it is mine. So mine is also towards myself. So that is called selfish love or attachment. Then you grow out of it, try to grow out of it with sadhana, with bhakti. Bhakti for the other person also. Don't think that I don't need bhakti for the other person. I need that. Why would I do anything if I don't have bhakti? Bhakti, one is, what would you say, emotion changed into devotion, which India used to have. Bhakti to the children, bhakti to the husband, bhakti to the parents, which is also vanishing, by the way, slowly and slowly. So, bhakti to some symbolic god who is present everywhere. This is the idea of Vishishtadvaita. That you can have your emotional attachment, but don't be attached to the individual, but to the presence of God in the individual. So that is, then love changes into something else which does not bring bondage. Bondage is when you feel, when you want to eat the universe. And bondage decreases when we share. So the sharing starts at Vishishtadvaitic level. So with the help of this sharing, slowly and slowly, you move towards Advaita, where the whole universe is embraced, if it is possible, in some lifetime. Advaita is no joke, but in this age, it's a very strange thing, that is the movement which we are moving towards. So that is real love. How do I see God in the other? Unless I see God in myself, I won't see it in the other. I have to change. I have to shift my position within myself, not be attached to the body, and understand that I have a different level of functioning within myself. I am not only the body. I am something more. So that, again, is sadhana, that I need to change my position within myself by doing japam, by relating to the ishta, by understanding or telling my mind again and again and again, billions of times, that I am not the body. Then only I can see beyond the body. Otherwise, it's impossible not to remain limited to this curtain, this strange curtain which body presents to us. Not only the body, nowadays it's become the dress. I am related to her, all these. I am not attached to them. I am related to all of you. I am not attached. And yet I can reciprocate to your need, whatever the need. This is the whole idea of this age. This is what Swamiji wanted. This is what Sri Ramakrishna wanted. Look at the need and then reciprocate without attachment. That's the whole idea.
How do you break the habit of obsession to connect?
Hit your own mind. Smash it. No other way. Or the world will smash you. Either I do it to myself, or the world will give me blows. Which is happening? Millions of next generation people have migrated. Isn't that a blow? Look at yourself and ask whether it's a blow or not. So I can fall down because the blow is so hard, or I can understand that this freedom is absolutely a must. I must give freedom to the other with whom I am related so that they can also fight their own battle. Everyone is fighting a battle in this age.